section86.com. We're changing the world of podcasting one show at a time.
86 Productions.
The Mark, the best podcast providing the most in-depth insight and analysis into the world of professional wrestling. On today's show, we have Aaron, Roger, and Doug to join Andrew as we discuss this month's view from the turnbuckle. So, we have some future endeavors. Aaron, who are they?
Emma, Darren Young, and Summer Rae. To be frank, though, Emma is kind of the only one that was a little bit of a surprise, seeing how she just had a program with Asuka, but apparently they didn't have anything else for her.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Doug, do you have any thoughts?
And just like Aaron said, Emma was the only one that was kind of surprising. The rest of them, I mean, when was the last time we ever saw any of them on TV or live TV? And I don't count the other Super Show or whatever it is on. But Emma was a little bit of a surprise just because I thought they had something going with her and building up others' talent. I thought, if anything, they could even send her back to NXT and help develop more women down there.
Yeah, I think Emma was a surprise, and I think it was a mistake unless she asked for her release, because she would have been perfect to be kind of paired up with Paige and two divas going nowhere, or women, whatever you want to call them now. As far as Darren Young and Summer Rae, meh. I mean, I hadn't seen Darren Young since they were supposed to make him great again, and Summer Rae, yeah, nope, just, you know, later.
Yeah, I agree. She did a Marine 4, and I think that's what hurt her career, among other things. But let's talk Survivor Series. We had the 5-on-5 men's match, and it was interesting, and I have a weird feeling this, but Roger, since you had the clean sweep, what were your thoughts on the match?
Let's see. I'll start with the positives. Jason Jordan did not interfere. I approved of that. Braun Strowman, he looked like a monster. They protected him very well. I think that's pretty much all of the good things I can say about that match. It was weird, and I'm not saying it in a good way. It was a very, very anticlimactic finish. The crowd seemed as confused as the look on Braun Strowman's face. No one really understood what was going on. I'm still trying to figure out why Shane McMahon, he in his 40s, who's not a regular wrestler, was able to single-handedly fight off Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn before surviving Kurt Angle's ankle lock for a good 2+ minutes before being such a dangerous threat that 14-time World Heavyweight Champion Triple H felt the need to trick him so that he could catch a pedigree. I mean, it was just like they booked Shane like he was this Stone Cold and The Rock's love child monster super face. And I'm still not really sure what the purpose of the finish was. Cole kept saying Hunter played Braun, but he didn't do anything to Braun until after the match was over. I don't know what the purpose of that finish was other than they're setting up Hunter Braun. But compared to last year, how well it was booked and how important everyone looked, this match only made Braun look better. Other than that, everyone came out of this match either nowhere or looking worse. And John Cena didn't even look like he cared, from the lime green attire to he just got eliminated and walked off. I don't know. Meh. This match was very weird, and it did not carry the show.
Yeah, I very similar, similar views than what Roger had. I feel that the match itself, looking at it as a whole, the booking decision was really suspect. It feels like it was something that they had come up with that day, is what it felt like to me. You had 10 people in the ring, and there's one guy realistically that is kind of the oddball out, and that's Shane McMahon. As much as I like Shane is the oddball out. He is not a wrestler, and having him be the sole survivor, I think, was a mistake. You know, we all knew Triple H was going to turn on him. It was not a surprise. It was not a, oh, hey, I wonder what's going to happen here. It was a, I know exactly what's going to happen. You know, he attacked Kurt, and then he attacked Shane, and he said, no surprise. And to Roger's point, the Braun thing is what really confused me, because I was thinking, did we miss something? Like, did this skip ahead, and we just didn't see where Triple H played Braun? Braun was just on the outside. Like, Braun, it didn't matter what was going on. So it made no sense. The leaps that you had to make were very surprising for this. And especially, you know, you came from the AJ Brock Lesnar match, and this is what you go to next? Kind of surprising.
I just think the KO Sammy part, when they ran in, just it was late in the match. The only two people left were Randy Orton and Shane. They should have interfered a lot earlier in the match to actually make it a aspect of they actually screwed over Team SmackDown. Because at that point, you have Randy Orton and you have Shane McMahon. So basically, you have Randy Orton versus what? I think there was like three or four of them left at that point.
I think it was four on two still.
Four on two. So realistically, Raw had won it by then. So by the time they interfered, they didn't cost SmackDown anything. Absolutely nothing. They didn't even cost, like, Randy Orton wasn't even looking for the tag to Shane McMahon. So it's not like he was getting beat up and they were going for the hot tag and all of a sudden KO and Sammy interfere in that. It was just they showed up, they hit him a couple times, and then they ran off. It didn't make any sense whatsoever. So apparently the creative for WWE is using the Chewbacca defense, that if we make everything completely make no sense, it'll make some sense somehow. And I just didn't get it. So Braun did look strong, but I honestly don't know why he would ever care about what Triple H did.
And let's say one more thing. And I think we all have respect for what Kurt Angle accomplished throughout his career, but he looks done. Like, watching that match, Kurt Angle looks as finished of a wrestler as I've seen in quite some time. He didn't look like he could move. He didn't look like he could take bumps. And did he even deliver an angle slam in that match?
Yeah, he did. Yeah. But also, he was protected in the previous match, I mean, big time. This one, I don't think he was protected at all. They're like, listen, go out and wrestle. And I think that he was so out of shape, and he probably didn't expect that he was really going to wrestle, that he just looked like crap. And realistically, how is Triple H going to carry Angle, or if Triple H is going to wrestle Braun, or, you know, like, or is Angle going to wrestle Braun? Like, how are you going to do that if Angle looked that bad? It's impossible. Actually, I was going to let you guys know that I love the match and see what your reactions were, but yeah, the match sucked. My thing was, I thought Survivor Series is that you're supposed to, in that match, since there's only one, you're going to elevate one person. There's going to be a star. When it got to the point where he had Randy Orton and Shane McMahon, I was like, who are you going to elevate? There's no way that Orton needs it or Shane needs it. It makes no sense whatsoever. I really thought that maybe they're going to give, like, Bobby Roode, like, make him look really good, but instead they didn't. I think that actually hurt Bobby Roode. But
I will say I did enjoy the Triple H Bobby Roode spots.
Yes, I did. And I thought that was done really well. And I mean, the match itself, I think, was like 40 minutes long, approximately. But I thought that was like 30 minutes too long, because you could have done this really fast.
But 10 of those minutes were a combination of Shane McMahon standing out of the ring, like, looking what to do, and Triple H basically standing in there. Like, a lot of the end of the match fell so flat because it was just nothing. It was just Shane standing around. And at a certain point, we're like, dude, we get it. Get in the ring, take your whooping. Or Triple H, like, pretending. Like Aaron said, we all knew it was coming. This was not some swerve that we're like, oh my God, Hunter's teamed up with Shane. We're like, okay, so give him the pedigree already. And then the crowd knew it. There was no reaction when he pedigreed him. The crowd was like, duh. Owens and Zayn would have made way more sense, like Doug said, had it been down to 2-on-2. And this is, you know, Owens and Zayn attacking Nakamura and Rude. And they had fought back from a 4-on-2 disadvantage, and they got a chance maybe to win the match, and then they screw them over. Instead, all they did was basically take an RKO and run away from an old man with a chair.
Yep.
This match helped nobody on SmackDown.
Yeah, I would just say the match itself was just, it didn't help anyone. It was actually boring. I almost fell asleep 3 times in it, and that was actually when they started doing the entrances too. But overall, it was bad. And I think also, I mean, the other parts of the show were okay, but this, even though I knew Raw was going to win, it just felt bad. Oh, this match. But, oh well, so Angle's probably going to wrestle Triple H, and then he's going to have to carry him all through Royal Rumble, and then we're going to get bored halfway through the match because he's going to look bad.
I don't even know if that's going to happen, to be honest. You know, like Roger said, Angle looked done. He did not look like he could go. And so I don't know if we're going to lead to an Angle Triple H. Maybe Jason Jordan fills in for him. So we have Jason Jordan Triple H. That's a possibility, but I don't think that we're going to see Angle Triple H anymore.
I don't want to see Jason Jordan Triple H. I'd rather see Chad Gable and Triple H. I think that would be a decent match. But Oh, well. So let's move on to the IC title picture. So Miz loses to Baron Corbin, which I'm still shocked about. And then something else interesting happens on Raw. What happened, Doug?
Roman Reigns, for whatever reason, was given the Intercontinental title. I don't get it. He doesn't want it. He's going to treat it like the other. He's going to throw it over his shoulder again and not treat it like the true title that it is. This is horrible. I understand you want to make Roman look strong. You need to have him on the show for some reason because he's not in the main event contention right now because you need to save him to get to WrestleMania. But so you're giving him a title just to hold off for a few minutes or a few months. And then, I don't know, you know, he'll probably, you know, win the tag team titles with the Shield so he can hold those titles. And then he'll win the heavyweight title at WrestleMania. And then he can be an all-time champion and have every single title. And why not just give him the women's title just for fun?
The one title that's eluded him his entire career, the Raw Women's Championship.
Yeah, it's bad. I'm surprised that they actually gave it to Roman so soon. I mean, it doesn't make sense. I mean, Miz loses, and then you do that. I mean, come on. That makes no sense.
Hey, Andy, I have a question for you. I got to go back because you had mentioned something that stuck with me. You had said, I think the WWE values the Intercontinental Championship more than they value the U.S. Championship.
Yeah.
Would you like to care to comment on that after this past Monday night?
Well, apparently that is not the case because they gave it to Roman Reigns, so they don't give a crap about that title. And
maybe they care too much about it. That's why they gave it to Roman.
Yeah, they care about it too much and they gave it to Roman. Yeah, right. They did it so he would say, I'm a Grand Slam champion. I've won them all.
He's the youngest person to make the Grand Slam champion.
Oh, God. Jim.
Are you kidding me?
Oh, so now the big dog also gets another record. Hey, can I ask you three all a question here? Because, and I had mentioned this to Aaron, very much like WrestleMania 32, where you all were convinced that Ambrose was going to be the one to beat Lesnar. Why did you think Miz was going to win? I'm legitimately curious as to your thought process on this, having seen the way that match was booked.
I thought they valued the IC title more than they did the US title, but I'm apparently wrong because, I mean, that's what happened. The whole thing with Ambrose, you know, I really thought that would be the biggest swerve, but looking back on it, it was kind of like, why did I even think that? I mean, that's what it boils down to. Why would I think that, you know, Ambrose had a fighting chance? But, oh, well.
Yeah, I agree. Looking back about the Lesnar-Ambrose, clearly, you know, I should have gone with Lesnar. The Miz, though, my thought process was Miz has been, I don't want to say buried, but he had put in a few favors. You know, he was the one that got pinned in the 3-on-5 match against Angle and the Shield. He was the one that got pinned against the Shield match on Raw. So my thought was, okay, this is how they get him a win back. You know, it's against Baron Corbin, somebody who they obviously don't have a ton of stock in with the way that they've treated him. So maybe this is the time to give that to Miz. Even if I would have chosen Raw to win the 5-on-5, I like this match. I felt very confident that Miz was gonna get the win here. That one surprised me more than anything.
I think after looking at the card and realizing how it had to form out, we all agreed that Raw was gonna win Survivor Series. But I agree now that I should have picked it the other way around, just because of the fact that yes, if you're gonna have the 5-on-5 be the last match, the one to decide it, it's like, oh, well, yeah, if that's the last one that decided, I should have picked Raw because Raw was going to win it. But so looking back at it, yeah, it was kind of a mistake. I think with the burial that they were doing of Baron and the fact that, you know, Miz is still just so strong for them, I thought that's why I picked Miz and was hoping for that to work out. For the Brock thing, anytime you throw in a hardcore match or tables match or anything like that, I'm open to the idea that anything can happen because you can explain things better. This one, I you know, even looking back, and I'd still say the Miz. Looking back, I still say Ambrose in a hardcore match, but that match did not work out like it was supposed to because Brock obviously called the shots behind the scenes to say, I'm not even going to use a table or chair or anything. And it was basically a regular match with just toys on the outside. But
I legit forgot it was a hardcore match until you said that. I actually thought they'd just gotten a normal match. And then I was like, oh, yeah.
Oh, no, no, no. If it was a normal match, yes, you're right. We would all be out of our minds to not pick Lesnar in a normal match. But that's why I picked that one. So it hurts me to see that The Miz is doing this. The only thing I can think of is because Maryse is legit pregnant, if he's taking his maternity leave for this long, I would have figured that they could have done this a little bit later so that he could, you know, be written off TV or something like that. But this seems a little sudden.
Well,
he's also leaving to film a movie, from what I read.
Oh, yeah, okay. There's a rumor that Marine 5, believe it or not, is getting filmed.
Marine 6, Andy. Whatever. Have you not seen the trilogy?
I haven't even seen the first one.
All right, Andy, you need to see it. It is worth watching. All right, Marine 3, 4, and 5, Miz's best work to date. Gotta watch it.
Let's just put it this way, Aaron. I've watched probably the first 40 minutes of 12 Rounds, the one with Dean Ambrose in it. I never finished it. But I'm going to at some point. I just haven't got around to it yet.
So our next movie review in the podcast is going to be the Marine 5, is what you're saying.
Well, Marine 3 is set in Seattle, so, you know, we should watch that.
Marine 3 it is. All right. Stay tuned for that episode, folks.
You think with all the budget cuts that WWE is making, I think I'd rather see pyro at main events and pay-per-views than watch any of those movies.
I completely agree on that. But yeah, so poor Miz. I feel bad. But, you know, the next really... What, Aaron, if you had to pick, who should be the one to defeat Roman to get the IC title back?
Well, you have to make it so it's not a heel that people like, right? It can't be a, you know, for example, like Kevin Owens. Obviously, they're on separate brands. Kevin Owens wins, though, and people are happy about that. So you have to find somebody on the Raw roster that could take it from him or potentially take it from somebody else if they do like a triple threat match. You know, you think about somebody like Elias. You know, if they wanted to go that route, let's say it's Elias, Matt Hardy, and Roman in a match. You know, that's a weird pairing, I know. But let's say Elias then pins Matt and gets the title. You could go down that a route, something like that. But it has to be a heel that you do not like, because if it's a good heel or if it's a good face, then that's going to be a recipe for disaster.
Big Show.
I mean, he could turn heel if you want him to.
I've got the greatest idea that WWE can do.
Oh, no.
This Royal Rumble, for the first time ever, it's going to be for the Intercontinental title.
How does SmackDown? Oh, you know what? I'm okay with this. I don't even care. So I kind of disagree, Aaron, that it has to be a heel, because I think you have someone who both needs to be in the Intercontinental division for now and has already beaten Roman Reigns clean one-on-one, and it's Finn Balor.
Mm-hmm.
He is the perfect candidate to take the championship off of him.
But Finn is so well loved that Roman will get crapped on that entire match. And do you really want that to happen before he wins the Royal Rumble and goes on to take the Universal title from Lesnar?
Don't say that.
Yes.
Don't say that he's going to win the Royal Rumble.
Here's why it's okay for a face to take it from him. If a heel takes it from him, like you said, then it sounds weird. Why is the crowd cheering the bad guy? If it's face versus face, the commentators in the story can just spin it that, oh, it's just the Balor Club cheering for Finn so loudly. They just love the other face so much. So it's not a burial of Roman by the crowd. It's just that they love Finn Balor because he's James Dean Tough and blah, 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 you know, whatever their dumb catchphrase is. And as far as credibility, too, right? Like, I'd love to see Samoa Joe do it, but I don't think he should be in the IC title scene. So I think Finn Balor, I mean, And I'm thinking one-on-one. Obviously, Jason Jordan could do it in a triple threat match if you let him pin Elias. That's not a big deal. But if you want someone to get an actual good rub and look credible, who needs it? It's Finn Balor or Bray Wyatt. But I've given up, much like Sami Zayn, on Bray Wyatt winning big matches. So let Finn Balor win, you know, a special episode of Raw where they go in a main event and he beats Roman and everybody's happy.
Maybe they should do it on main event so that nobody sees it happen.
Oh my
god. You make an unfortunate point.
Watch that be the
highest rated show of the week.
But you know, the thing is, I think one of the bigger questions though is what's gonna happen with the Shield. There's always the option of them breaking up, you know, a heel turn in there. But if Roman is gonna be kind of the focal point with the IC title, Doug, what do you think that means for Ambrose and Rollins?
I think you put them back in the tag team title. They're obviously going to get their rematch to have it. And I could see WWE doing this where they have the same thing like they did with the New Day. The Shield have the title so that you also have Roman be part of the tag team champions, in which any one or two of the three can defend the titles. And it helps Roman look strong. So, you know, because you got to do that. You got to make Roman look stronger than he actually is, because he's smoking pot.
No, that's Randy Orton. He vapes.
Oh, my bad. My bad.
No. He quit smoking. You'd know this if you were on the European tour.
Oh, my bad.
Because you were sent home.
My bad. My bad. Yeah, that's a toughie with Shield. I don't know what they should do. Actually, the other thing is, I'm surprised they wouldn't try and tease something with Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar for a Royal Rumble. But why do it if he has the IC title? Because realistically, you should defend the IC title. Oh, wait, it's WWE, so they will not defend it, of course.
Well, it could be champion versus champion. That's obviously been a historic match in the past at WrestleMania. You know, very similar to the Ultimate Challenge. You could do the IC champion versus the World Heavyweight Champion. It's not like the IC title will probably be defended at WrestleMania anyway, so this is the way for it to be a high-profile type match if it's in the main event. I don't think that they will do this, because as much as I've been screaming for a heel turn for Roman, much like all of us, it's not going to happen. But if you wanted a way to kick off your hot angle, what would be a better way than ending Brock Lesnar's one-year title reign with a Shield heel turn? And they just ambush Lesnar.
Like, all three, you
know, well, basically, think of the same way that 31 went down. Brock gives Roman everything he can. He can't put him away. Roman keeps kicking out. Instead of the cash-in, the ref goes down, and the Ambrose and Rollins come through the crowd. The crowd would boo. Don't get me wrong. They would boo the idea of Ambrose and Rollins helping Lesnar. But what an angle to see the dominant trio turn heel in the main event of WrestleMania, and they beat Lesnar. And now you have people for them to go after, and Lesnar can go away. He didn't have to come back till SummerSlam, and they can say they put him out. And now you can let Joe go after him if you want. You can let Finn go after him. You can basically send the house at the Shield. And all of those would be entertaining matches. And now Roman can be booked as dominant as you want to, because Roman is a dominant heel. It's a fantastic idea.
And the people will still boo him.
He'll get the biggest heat we've seen probably since Hollywood Rock. Like, he would get mega heel heat. I mean, just imagine. Remember when he came out the night after he beat The Undertaker? Imagine he comes out the night after WrestleMania 34. I ended the streak, and I ended the beast. That's all he has to say.
What people should do then is look at him and then turn around and put their backs to him. Be like, we're not watching this crap. That would be the funniest thing. But he's getting a reaction. I think that's what the positive thing is. But, oh, and we might have some good news at the first of the year. We might find out if Matt Hardy can use the broken gimmick, if it's still going to be power, you know, popular. But oh well. So let's move to SmackDown. So we had, of course, Shane McMahon and Kevin Owens are going at it still. And, of course, Shane gets attacked by, of course, Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens. I really want to know, what is the end goal on this one, Aaron?
I think it's to try to get Owens and Sami over a little bit more than what they currently are. Shane McMahon is the type of person who we don't see. It's very different than Stephanie. Stephanie almost never gets her comeuppance. Stephanie is constantly belittling everybody. She is the one who is getting over on somebody else, and very rarely do we see her get her comeuppance. Shane, on the other hand, it's constant. So Shane is putting over all of these wrestlers, and that's a part of, you know, obviously the writing and also the pull that he has backstage. Kudos to Shane for that. My guess is that this, you know, KO and Shane have already had their match. They'll probably maybe have another match, but also it could have a match with Sammy, and Sammy taking on a McMahon is a really big deal. You know, for his career, that is a really big thing that could be a big highlight for him. And so I think the end goal is, you know, maybe we have a match at WrestleMania. Maybe that's what they're building towards, or maybe they are building towards Rumble, or maybe something in between. My guess is that the idea is to get both of them over as much as possible before they either go to a different brand, go their separate ways, or something else.
I don't know if you guys saw they did a lot of stuff on social media for backstage for Survivor Series and everything like that. But one of the little skits or promos they did backstage was Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens talking to Stephanie McMahon, and Sami Zayn saying how much he would love to be back on Raw and apologizing to Stephanie McMahon. It was kind of a little weird. So look that one up if you haven't seen it. But it kind of gives you that little feel that, and you kind of felt like that when Shane was talking about them getting fired. It's like, okay, so they get fired from SmackDown and they'll get rehired by Raw. So very, very likely, very possibility. I just don't know why you would want to get rid of two more talents. I mean, I feel bad for Sammy if this is the way that they're going, because now he has jumped from one show to the other show to get more opportunities and they never use him there. So you're going to pop him back on Raw where he's going to have no opportunities. I mean, Kevin Owens will thrive, but Sammy, I don't know. I think this is a good time to have them go into the tag team title mix, just because you have so few tag team titles on SmackDown or legitimate tag teams. So let them go in there. Let them take on the New Day again, or take on more the Usos. Give them the titles for a little bit. But I think the end goal is to have actually more of a Shane versus Daniel Bryan, since he didn't fire them on Tuesday, which he was supposed to do, according to Shane. I think this will bleed more into a Shane versus Daniel Bryan than it does more of a Shane versus KO or Sammy.
I mean, I slightly agree with Aaron's point that he's putting over wrestlers, but I'm kind of tired of Shane. And I like Shane, but I don't need to see him being the focus of SmackDown. That is kind of what, much like Raw is always a McMahon show, I don't really need SmackDown to also be the Shane McMahon show. I like what Daniel Bryan does. He is the authority figure, but the show is not about him. The show is about the wrestlers. Shane versus KO already happened. I'm done with that feud. It's been going on since before SummerSlam. Move on. I don't know. I don't see an end game for this. You know, in a perfect world, I believe AJ would retain his title and go on to fight Kevin Owens, except for they fought like 16 times over the summer. So I don't really want to see that match anymore. AJ versus Sammy would be great, but they haven't booked Sammy to be on AJ's level. And with AJ just now going toe-to-toe with Brock Lesnar, come on now. He should be able to take out Sami Zayn without any problem. You know, SmackDown can go a lot of different ways, but right now it kind of seems like it's just lost. Like, it should be better than it is. And part of the problem is that Shane has inserted himself into a lot of storylines, and I think he has the best of intentions. But, like, I just don't see what the end game for Shane versus KO and Sammy really is right now. And if Doug is right and it's Daniel Bryan, okay, that's fine. But then you need to start really working toward the Daniel Bryan Shane McMahon tension, and that they're going one way and they're going a different way. And maybe they could have had some tension over the picks about, why did you go pick up John Cena when he's not even on our roster? Maybe you should have taken somebody from our own roster. You know, why did one of you leave off Kevin? I thought they could have done a better job with that. And I don't know. I'm a little confused. You know, I'm willing to give SmackDown the benefit of the doubt because they've been better than Raw at the very least. And, you know, since the brand split, they've been the more entertaining show. But right now, I'm confused. Like, I don't see it. I don't understand where it's going. The only really spot of this that could be good is that if Daniel Bryan happens to make his ending return, then it's all worth it. But I doubt it. And then what was this all for in the end?
They probably thought about it on the flyer, like, maybe we should do this, is what I'm assuming really happened. But sorry, I love Shane, but there's sometimes if I see him twice a year, I'm fine with it, but not every week. Oh, well, of course, the good news, you guys probably already know, but AJ Styles did pwn good old Jinder Mahal. He is no longer the champion. So we actually have a true champion, someone who can wrestle, because let's just put it this way. Jinder Mahal, Brock Lesnar. That's called bathroom break. Or if you really hate Jinder and Brock starts beating the crap out of him, you're going to want to watch it for the 5 minutes that it actually is. But AJ Styles did have a great match against Brock Lesnar. I was pleasantly shocked about how good it was, but but it also kind of showcases that the fact that the F5 is a very powerful move. And because I think he only hit the one F5, if I'm correct. But overall, I was very happy with the match. AJ Styles pulled. I mean, AJ Styles, you can tell that he did it all. It was all him. And he made Brock look good, which means that he can make anyone look good except Jinder Mahal. So, Roger, what did you think about what they're doing with AJ Styles and also the match that he had against Brock?
Well, I'm going to disagree with you on one point. That wasn't all AJ. Brock more than did his part, and he was fantastic in that match. His offense is Brock's offense. But it was his selling to me that I was super impressed with. He made the calf crusher look legitimately devastating. And when he was in that move, he really made you feel like, wow, he might actually tap. And the way he had to get out, his like very savage, I'm going to grab you by the head and slam you into the mat out of desperation, was pretty much the perfect counter. It was like, I don't have any other choice, so I'm just going to use brute force and hope I can knock you out. That was great. I mean, this match was better than my expectations were for it. I think it only went 15 minutes. I don't think it went very long, but it was a very entertaining 15 minutes. There was one of the better beatdowns. It was very John Cena-like in the sense, and the commentators reference this about how it was like the onslaught, except for unlike Cena, who never recovered, AJ recovered. And he all of a sudden looked like he had a chance in the match. That's how I wanted that match to be booked. Nothing that Brock and Jinder were going to do was going to come anything close to that. The only thing good about Jinder who had been in that match that he eats a pinfall and maybe Brock throws him into the sixth row. This was a good match. This elevated AJ Styles. This did exactly what I wanted to do. Now AJ looks legit. And not that he wasn't legit before, but he went toe-to-toe with the top guy in the company. AJ Styles versus Nakamura means more if they go at it at WrestleMania. AJ Styles versus everyone means more. So to me, this was, you know, the best match of Survivor Series, and it was a champion versus champion match. Both look worthy. Now, am I happy that AJ's probably going to lose to Jinder at Clash? No, but I'm just going to enjoy the Survivor Series match for what it was. Great match.
This was the best match of the whole night. I felt it went long. I was very surprised at the length of the match, but overall it was fantastically done between Brock and AJ. They put on a great match. The calf crusher really did. Everybody was excited in that arena. They legitimately thought it was a possibility that he was going to tap out. It was a brutal match. It was so much fun. It was so much fun to watch. But yes, it does. It elevates AJ even more. It gives Brock Lesnar his devastating aspect that no one can beat him except for Roman. So I'm happy to see where it was. The unfortunate is now we're back to AJ versus Jinder. Do we really have to go through this at a pay-per-view? Why couldn't we do this at the next SmackDown and then just leave it there and move on to the next contender? Because I don't want to see AJ go from Brock Lesnar in a great match to, all right, let's go see him versus Jinder Mahal again. And why? Let's not see it again. I don't know what it's really going to set that up, but hopefully this will be the last of it. And you know what? We can end 2017, the nightmare year that Jinder Mahal was a champion, and go into 2018 strong. So that's what I think about that.
Yeah, I agree with all your guys' points about the match that he had with Lesnar. But I disagree with you, Roger. I don't think that Jinder's going to get the title back at Clash of Champions. I think had they fought on SmackDown this past week, I thought that maybe Jinder gets the title back. And then at Clash of Champions, they have the, you know, the trilogy and Jinder retains there. You know, that's the way that you can blow off AJ. I'm starting to get to the mindset now where AJ is going to be the one who retains at Clash of Champions. And, you know, obviously my pick mech change, you know, for when we do our picks of who's going to win. But right now I think AJ is going to be the guy to hold on to the title. I think he's probably going to go into Mania. In fact, I think that they're going to have a credible challenger for him. Maybe it could be Kevin Owens. Maybe it could be Shinsuke, you know, maybe Rude gets built up. You know, I'm not sure what they're going to do, but you know, we'll see with that. But I am happy that AJ has the title. And I think that it will be a good year for going into WrestleMania.
Well, before we move on, then let me ask you one question. Then AJ has seemingly, if he wins, who would you have him move on to? Because I guess that is my question, is that there aren't a ton of heels on SmackDown, whereas there are still other faces. And I hate Jinder. I've made that more than well known. I don't want him to get the title back, but there are more faces for him to face than I see that there are heels for AJ to face going forward right now. So that is my concern, is that if AJ wins, as he should, who is his logical contender for the Rumble?
So what you do, I think, in that situation, I think back to when Punk had the title, and they, I think it was like a four corners match they set up, and Ziggler was the one that won it, right? So Ziggler was not a credible champion to go against Punk, you know, at the Royal Rumble. That was just, it was a throwaway match, right? But they made you feel like he was a credible champ. What I would do is I'd do something very similar. You can either do a eight-person tournament, you know, four corners match, and the winner goes on to face AJ at Royal Rumble. You can have a face in that match. You can have heels. It doesn't matter who AJ faces. He had a great match against Randy Orton. You could theoretically do that again, but on a pay-per-view. Or if you want to, you could save that for down the road. You have Sami Zayn. And yes, Sami is definitely not on Brock's level, like you had mentioned. But if you build Sami up in the right way, potentially he could be. If the New Day turns heel, like we are kind of suspecting that, you know, you might have one or two people in there, you know, splinter out, you could have that person go on to face AJ. I think that there are some opportunities there if they do go down that route. Like I said, right now my pick is for AJ to win, but we'll find out in a month.
I say take Bobby Roode, give him the U.S. title, let Baron go after the main event for a little bit.
Actually, that's what I was going to mention. Why don't you have Bobby Roode to build him up, let him have the U.S. title? And if you want to do the whole thing where he's still a tweener, then you could. I still want them to bring back the Canadian Championship. I just wish they would do that because it would be funny. And Bobby Roode could do that, Canadian. But yeah, that's what I think they'll end up doing, because where do you go? What are you going to do with Baron Corbin? I mean, that's the, I think, the one of the problems with the show besides Shane McMahon. But anyways, and by the way, I will say it right now, AJ Styles will defeat Jinder Mahal at Clash of Champions.
Yep.
Just going to say it. So let's talk about the women's invasion. We actually had three women invade Raw, led by Paige. And so she is back without Del Rio. And then three others invaded SmackDown. So, Doug, what did you think about the fact that they actually brought the women in, especially the three, the five women, the five calls? What were your thoughts on that?
I thought it was rather sudden for a lot of the women. I mean, you have now devastated the women's division in NXT. So you have five call-ups all in one night. I thought it was surprising on Raw to see the other two, but I believe one of them is what, Ronda Rousey's friend, isn't she?
Nope. You're thinking of Belzir. It's the other one. It's not her. It's the other MMA fighter they do.
Oh, okay. Because yeah, I thought that was one of the four horsewomen, no. Ronda Rousey. Because I thought if they could do it that way, if one of them was on Raw, one of them was on SmackDown, you could kind of have them tear up everything that's going on both sides to a four horsewomen match at WrestleMania eventually when they, you know, all meet up again. But you know, I'm still predicting that they do have the four horsewomen versus the four horsewomen at WrestleMania. But you know what? Let's see how this goes. You've got now more women in the division and still the same amount of time. So you have more people that are just going to be wasted backstage, I think. It's unfortunate. It gave it, you know, a nice excitement to the women's division in both leagues. It was kind of the, you know, same old story though. When you saw it on SmackDown, it's like, oh look, I bet I know what they're gonna do, and that's exactly what happened. So it wasn't as impactful as the Nexus, but I think that's what they were aiming for. And it's like, oh okay, that's cool. Three women are gonna take on what, everybody? Because that's fine. It's nice to see new blood. It's nice to see new people. You're going to get some, you know, maybe hopefully now that they have enough people that they're going to throw in some actually storylines for the people not fighting for the title. So that would be interesting instead of seeing the same old stuff, different day. So hopefully it's good.
So I'm going to disagree with you on one point. I don't think they devastated the women's division at all in NXT because nothing of value was lost. They didn't take Ember Moon. They didn't take Nikki Cross. They didn't take the iconic duo. They didn't take Kairi Sane. They took Liv Morgan, Sonya Deville, Ruby Riott, who's okay. I don't mind her. Mandy Rose, and somebody I don't even know. And it's those five and Paige. And it's basically Nexus. This is exactly what Doug said, in my opinion. I think they're all interconnected. I think it's a good move, and for one reason. we've been complaining about how shallow these divisions are for months. Now you've actually interjected some depth. And somebody's got to be at the bottom of the card. Dana Brooke can't eat all the pins. Now you've got about six women who can eat pinfalls. Because, I mean, let's be real. These are not stars in the making. This is not Bailey, Sasha, Charlotte, and Becky coming up. This is an Asuka. I don't think these women have much of a future. I think they'll have a nice little quick impactful story for a month or two, and then they'll go back to their rightful place at the bottom of the card, and they're going to eat pinfalls from the more talented women. And that's fine. I have no issue with that. This is a good way to introduce them, do a couple feuds. You know, I think they should show that Paige is leading all of them, and this is going to be a couple of attacks, and maybe the horsewomen team up to fight them, and that's totally fine. I have no problem with that. It's a good Rumble match. But this is now you have a good foundation for each division. These are your bottom tier people. Now, when you introduce somebody like Kairi Sane or when Ember Moon comes up, she can feud for 3 or 4 months with these three women and just continuously beat them, and no one cares. And I have no problem with that. Instead of making Bailey look like a joke and having to add her into a five-way to take a pinfall, which is about the stupidest thing I've ever heard, nobody cares if Liv Morgan takes a pinfall. Nobody cares if – I don't know. Who's with Paige? Sonya Deville and Mandy Rose? I don't know. I don't care. It's fine. I have no problem with it. I like it. Continue this bottom of the barrel talent. Don't take the good people from NXT until they're ready. Totally fine with this.
Actually, I in a roundabout way, I agree with both of you on this. I think that I believe that Liv Morgan, the real reason she was brought up is because she's so young. Same thing with Sarah Logan. I actually looked her up, and they're both 23 and 24. I think that's one of the main reasons why they brought him up. And I know that sounds really dumb, but it's WWE, and Vince is probably like, let's bring them up so they can develop on screen, and you know, like Roman Reigns has. But oh well. But yeah, so the call-ups, yeah, they've gone to each show, and that's pretty much really that's all that's happening right now. It's kind of sad. I thought there'd be more going on, but there isn't. So instead,
there's one other call-up. Hideo Itami is now on 205 Live.
That's right. He will be appearing on 205 Live. And I thought that's something interesting that they're doing. Very interesting. But
remember when we thought he was going to be what Shinsuke Nakamura was? Like, remember when Hideo Itami was a guy that we thought, this guy could be like CM Punk and Daniel Bryan. And now he's about to be on 205 Live.
Well, maybe.
If I had to say, if there was an award that I had to give him, I would say at one point he was in a great status and he has fallen. Because you go from competing in the main event to TakeOver 205 Live, something bad happened to your career.
Actually, what I think really is going to happen is I think 205 Live, I believe that they'll start taping it after the first of the year. I think they'll call it something else. But then they'll actually focus on just the fact, hey, let's actually have them wrestle. We'll tape it down at NXT, smaller crowd, and then maybe send them out maybe once a month to be on the road with everyone else. I think that's what's really going to happen. But who knows? We'll find out. WWE's crazy in these ways. So another crazy thing. Let's thank our sponsor, HostGator. Are you a blogger or a podcaster, or are you just not happy with your web host? You need to check out HostGator.com. You're going to find web hosting made easy and affordable. HostGator offers unlimited disk space, unlimited bandwidth, one-click strip that installs our FreeSet Builder, and hands on the best control panel out there. Stop by today and try a free demo to see how easy it is. And if you use a special coupon code, Off the Mark, you're going to save 25% off your web hosting packages. So what do you got to lose? Check out HostGator.com and take a bite out of your web hosting costs. Also, make sure you check out Section 86's Off the Mark page and click on the banner at the top to save big on items from WWEShop.com. So our monthly topic, we got to talk about it. The most exciting thing that happened over the weekend, and that was War Games, baby. So, Aaron, your thoughts on War Games. Was it good? Was it bad? Or, eh?
It was good. You know, there's been probably some better NXT shows. I think the Chicago one was probably the best one they put on this year. But it was still very good. The Velveteen Dream match was, I think, the highlight for sure. Him and Aleister Black, they put on a really, really good show. NXT title match was also fairly good. And then, of course, the War Games match. It was really cool to see a lot of the spots that they did in there. I actually wish that I saw a couple other, like, cruiserweight style spots going from ring to ring. There's one that always sticks out. I think it was Rey Mysterio. It probably wasn't him, but it was another cruiserweight who jumped from one rope to the other and then did a hurricanrana onto the other guy. It was just an amazing spot. It's really, really cool. It might not have been Mysterio.
It might have been Juventud.
Pretty sure it was Toby Tood, yeah.
Yeah, Juventud to Billy Kidman. Probably Hoobie.
Really, really cool stuff, though, you know? The only other thing I would have liked to see, but it was nice to see War Games back. And I'm of the mindset, and I know, Roger, you definitely feel this way, about the themed pay-per-views. And, you know, you have Hell in a Cell and TLC and Extreme Rules and stuff like that, where it's like, okay, no matter what, we're going to have a Hell in a Cell, but it's like, you don't really need that. Like, Hell in a Cell is the ender of a feud. And very similar with War Games, I think it actually, for WWE, if they do it for only NXT or if they bring them to the main roster, I would almost prefer to not have it be a, we're always going to do it every November. It's always going to be War Games. I'd rather have it be a, we're going to do this because these teams, they can't stand each other, so we have to do it. I hope that's the route that they go. But as far as the pay-per-view, as far as the NXT pay-per-view goes, whenever NXT puts pay-per-view on, in my opinion, that's must-see TV, as opposed to the WWE pay-per-views that typically follow it, which are, you can catch it on demand.
For me, War Games was an excellent show. Like Aaron said, Aleister Black and the Velveteen Dream match was surprisingly really, really good. I'm not much of a fan of the Velveteen Dream, but that was a very, very, very good match. The heavyweight title match really kind of surprised. Yeah, almost wins the title. And I was kind of figuring that if, because he wins the title, is Drew McIntyre going to get called up back to WWE? But overall, it still was a good match. Now, when it came to War Games, I was a little bit skeptical because I think there was one line in here, or one of the commentators said something from like the visionary Triple H, and I just about died laughing. Yes, he did alter the War Games itself. There was no roof, which I had no problem with because it meant they're going to jump off the top of the cage. This is going to be awesome. I didn't like the pinfall aspect, though. War Games was all about making the other team surrender. And when they said that if you go off the outside the cage, your team is forfeited. I kind of figured that one of them, and I was expecting Killian Dane to throw somebody over the cage and out, so then his team is technically forfeited, and then they could surrender. The other team could surrender or something like that. Roderick Strong could tap out or whatever, give up for his team. But the other aspect of it, and something we all kind of predicted, was that Roderick Strong would turn. And after watching several of the other War Games before the NXT pay-per-view started, there usually was at least one person that turned in War Games. So I was expecting it. I was waiting for it. I wanted to see who it was going to be. And that kind of let me down. But the match itself, wow, Garrett Wolf took a huge bump off of the into the tables, cut his head open, and continued. He showed that he had a lot of toughness into him. Killian Dane looked super strong, and I'm happy for him. He looked like he should be in the heavyweight contender match or going up for them. Hopefully, maybe he breaks off of Sanity and goes in for his own business or whatever. But he looked really, really strong, and I'm liking it. But overall, the people that got over the most is Adam Cole. He won it. He did everything for it, and the spots were spectacular. The match was spectacular. I don't know what else I can say about it. It was a very, very good match.
There's only one more thing you need to say, and it's Adam Cole, baby. Yeah. Look, I knew Adam Cole was popular. Listening to the crowd when Adam Cole would basically start his chant, you'd have thought he was the number one face on the show. He was clearly the most over guy in the match. And I understand why. The guy is uber talented. The one thing that I guess I don't want to say disappointed me, because I try not to get too much in my own head with fantasy booking and believe that they're going to do what I want to do. But they kept talking about that stipulation about if you leave the cage, you forfeit the match for your team. For some reason, I just had it in my head that like Roderick Strong was going to accidentally fall out of the cage, AOP was going to get taken out, and then they could make his heel turn and he joins, you know, the Undisputed Era or something, because it did seem weird that they added that stipulation. Why would you ever go to the top rope? Like, Adam Cole went up there, and what if he had just fallen down? Like, I don't know. It was kind of weird. The match was really good. I had no real problems with it other than, like Doug said, it's not a match that is won by pinfall. It is about war games. You make somebody tap, or you make them surrender. Something about a pinfall just doesn't sit right with me. It's like, it's just not war games. And I understand that we haven't seen it in 20 years, and WWE is going to do its own vision. You know, this is the visionary Triple H's, you know, type of match, so it's going to be different because it's all about the game. But, you know, I'm not mad with it. I agree with Aaron that I don't think this needs to be a yearly thing. This needs to be a special type of event. Make it so that when two teams just have a feud that just seemingly goes on and on and on, and, hey, you got to find a way to settle it, you settle it in war games. No problem with that. The one thing that I will say, Dream and Aleister Black, and I was like Doug, I was not a fan of Velveteen Dream, but let me say was, because that match was phenomenal. That was, in my opinion, the best match of the weekend, and no disrespect to AJ Brock, but Dream Black had a crowd element that I just did not expect. They were chanting "Say his name." He was hitting all the right spots. Like, it was weird for a guy who's so young and a guy who just didn't seem like he really could go that well. Him and Black meshed perfectly between the characters and the you know, they're just diametric opposites. And I was like, wow, I want to see more of that. Like, I hope this feud isn't over. I really hope they continue, because I think they have something special between these two, and this might be the best way to elevate Dream. Unfortunately, I think his ceiling is gold dust on the main roster, partially because I don't have faith in creative to do anything with a character that's, you know, requires more than just good guy, smile at the fans, bad guy, scowl at the fans. But, you know, in NXT, I think he'll be booked well, and I think this could be very entertaining. Good pay-per-view as always. You know, there's nothing new about it. Only thing that disappointed me, Lars Sullivan, is that his name? He sucks. I'm just going to say it right now. He sucks. Cassius Ohno did everything he could to make that match watchable, and every time Lars was on offense, I was like, God, you just are not good. Like, I literally at one point, I was like, huh, this is a guy that's just going to be built up to put over Roman. That's his only value. He's big. That's it. I mean, I'm just being honest. Like, there have been big guys who've come through who are talented. Rusev and Corbin was better than this. And we hated Corbin. And he made Corbin look like Shawn Michaels. I mean, just, this guy just – everything that he did looked awkward, and it wasn't impressive. And I was just like, go away. I never want to see him wrestle again. That was enough for me. Like, please be gone.
I feel bad for Cassius Ohno, because you can tell that he tried. And he was like, listen, this is my thing. I'm finally on a takeover. I want to make him look good so they continue to put me on there. But to me, I thought it was a step back from his character. It's like, well, why have him do it? I mean, that match to me was just pitiful. I was like, thank goodness it's over with, because I feel bad for Cassius Ohno. He should not have been putting up with this. You're right, Lars. So yeah, he can, I don't care whatever happens to him. But the next match, so I was not actually, I could care less about this match. Aleister Black and Velveteen Dream, I just didn't care about it. And I was shocked halfway through the match. I was like, this is intriguing. This has actually been decent. And then, of course, then it ends. I'm like, wow, that was too good to be, especially because I felt bad for Cassius Ohno. I was still thinking about him. But then I was like, wow, this actually made it okay, I guess. I mean, besides Lars Sullivan sucking. But yeah, this match was good. The women's match, I thought it was okay. It seemed rushed, but it was okay. For the NXT championship, I think that actually what really happened was, because they said legitimately Drew McIntyre did like tear his bicep, but they're not sure how much it was torn. But they said that's why, that there's a good chance that he was not supposed to win it, and they had to put it on him because they weren't sure what to do, and it would be the safe move to do. And because there's probably something going on, but whatever. But getting to the Wargames match, this one went 36 minutes long. I thought this was probably the highlight of the wrestling weekend. The match itself, everything you could think of, it had good spots. I thought the one thing Killian Dane did that I thought was hilarious was he gets in and it looks like he's getting in, and then people say we want tables, and he's like, oh yeah, I guess I can get tables. Like, you could tell that was planned out, and he's like, I know they're gonna do this, so I'm just gonna go and play it like this. And he did it, and he did it very well. That, I mean, there's, I don't really think if there's something I would want to change in it. I mean, having the top on it would have been cool. Having the superplex, I thought was really cool as well, seeing that. The fact about, like, your team's eliminated, I think that they should have just thrown that element out of the, just not even put that in there. But I thought overall I was really happy with the match. Had fun. I guess if we had to change, well, I take that back. If there's one thing we changed, maybe we'd actually change it so it's actually you have to make someone submit, or you have to make two teams submit or something like that, so you eliminate them. I don't know. That I guess that would be the only thing. But overall, these guys, especially for like the Ring of Honor guys who have not worked with anyone else, and Authors of Pain who actually look good as well, and Sanity, they all meshed really well together, and I was very happy with it. Overall, I'm very, very excited about what they did with War Games. Now, here's something that I actually looked up during a little bit ago while we were taping the show. NXT, it looks like they may be live next week because their next show starts at 7:30, and it's at Full Sail, and it's on a Wednesday, which I'm assuming they're going to air that live. So I'm wondering if there's going to be something that big that they did on purpose that they'll show live at that time. That's the only thing I could think of. Or maybe they're testing something out to possibly run NXT live opposed to, you know, like 205 live. I don't know, but just something for food for thought on that one.
I agree with all your guys' points about NXT, especially, you know, some of the matches. And, you know, I blocked out the Lars match from my mind. But Roger, I mean, you're absolutely right. Like, it is going to be a build up for Reigns. I mean, that's the only point of him, if that's the route that they go. You know, I feel bad for Cassius because that did not need to happen. It really didn't. But I thought War Games was fun. You know, I thought it was something we were excited for, and it delivered. It was, you know, a little bit of a nostalgia trip, but also it was really cool to actually see that match. And to see two rings next to each other, that made it a lot of fun. So I hope they do it again. And I hope that it, you know, they're able, it's not an every year thing, but I hope they do it again with some very, you know, just blood boiling, and, you know, some rivalry that is there for that team.
Yeah, I will say one thing, though. I actually think they should do this every year. Have it every Survivor Series, have the two rings in. I think that would be something interesting, or have something along those lines. The other thing I really hope they do. Oh, crap. You know what they're going to do? I bet you they're going to announce NXT is going to have their own Royal Rumble. That would be the one thing.
They don't have enough people for it.
You could do it. You could say it's like 20 guys and say it's every 90 seconds or something like that.
But the Rumble works because you see it once a year. The moment you start doing these extra Rumbles, it loses what makes it special. Like, you know, it's like Money in the Bank. We loved Money in the Bank because it was a once a year thing. Once you started doing it two and three times a year, or Hell in a Cell, it was special when it came around. Now you see three Hell in a Cells every pay-per-view or every Hell in a Cell year. You know, it just doesn't mean anything anymore. And I think the Rumble is something that Vince has always been pretty protective of. He's only changed it once, and they did that awful 40-man Rumble. And then other than that, it's pretty much always been the exact same. I don't think he changes it. They'll do weird little special Rumbles. You know, they've done SmackDown Rumbles and Raw Rumbles and things like that. I don't think you're going to get somebody else doing a Royal Rumble. That's kind of one of his babies, where I think it's always going to be just the Royal Rumble for in January, and you leave it as such.
Well, what is WWE doing wrong right now that like a pay-per-view that NXT could actually make good? Like, if you look at War Games, like, they, I think if WWE did it, it would have sucked. But if you had NXT do it, that was great. What's something that NXT could do then that is something that basically the WWE roster is not doing properly? What do you think, Roger?
The ready to rumble triple tier.
There we go.
Oh, God.
Let's bring the triple tier back.
I'm cool.
So, I hate both of you right now. So I will say this, and this is the big difference in my opinion between mid-card matches on NXT and mid-card matches on the main roster, is that if you look at who gets over in these mid-card matches on, you know, the main shows, it's usually no one. Like, most of the time, outside of maybe Miz Ziggler last year, no one comes out of these feuds looking better. Finn Balor, Bray Wyatt was horrible. Like, what's the, you know, think about it. What's the last mid-card feud that was any good in WWE? You know, the main event feuds on Raw are pretty solid. You know, Braun versus Roman was fun. Joe versus Brock was fun. But the mid-card feuds, for the most part, suck. Whereas Velveteen Dream and Aleister Black, both of them just came out of that match looking phenomenal. They build throughout the card so that when people are elevating, they have fan support, they have character development, they actually have a reason to go up. On the main roster, the mid card is terrible, and then you randomly just decide that this guy's the main eventer for no apparent reason. You know, Jinder Mahal is a perfect example. He got no build. And then magically he went from losing to Finn Balor in 8 minutes to the world heavyweight champion 8 weeks later for no reason. Whereas on NXT, you get built up throughout the process. That is WWE's biggest problem, is that their mid-card sucks. There's nothing usually worth watching except the main event. SmackDown occasionally does a good job of this. The problem is it's like they go for, you know, 3 or 4 months really well, and then Vince decides to reset, or whoever calls the shots over there, they just go, okay, we're just going to ignore that. And then they go back. I mean, remember when Luke Harper was getting built up quite well, and we were like, whoa, he's on the verge of becoming something. Disappeared. American Alpha, built up pretty well. Disappear. Like, it's like they get there and they just kind of forget it. Now, when they follow all the way through, it's great. Like the Usos, for example. But too often, they just like don't finish the process. That's my problem with the main roster. And it's even worse on Raw. They do like no buildup on Raw. It's just random crap.
One thing to point out also about War Games, if you really had to put out people who look good, there's only one person you have to remove. And then you're like, wow, everyone looked good. And we already said his name. So I'm not going to give him the credit for it. But yeah, I actually, that's a good point about that. The mid card, you basically have like, we'll say mid card for NXT, and they all, I mean, everyone looked good. Even the heavyweight match, both guys, I think, came out good. And the War Games match, I can't think of anyone who came out bad because they all looked really good when it was all said and done. So I was really happy about that. Overall, congratulations, NXT. They put on a great show. I really hope that they're having some big, like, I don't know if it's because of the holiday, which it probably is, but I'm just hoping that they have something special planned for the next pay-per-view, that which is going to be the night before Royal Rumble, which, honestly, if they can top whatever they do on that Saturday night before Royal Rumble, that's saying that they are doing something proper. I mean, that's the way to look at it.
NXT beats the main roster again.
I agree with you. I definitely agree with you on that. So, anywho, that's all the time we have for this month's show. If you're into the Twitter, you can follow the show at AuthMark86. I want to thank 86 Productions for hosting and editing the podcast, and I want to thank all of our listeners for taking the time to download and listen to the show. And for Roger Cave, Doug Hahn, and Aaron Hughes, I am Andrew Hughes, and until next time, we'll see you in the ring.